All right, Matthew, welcome back to episode 111 of the Performers Advantage podcast, where we bring sports science to the people with myself, Dr. Will O'Connor, and Dr. Matt Miller, aka MTB PhD, founder and creator of Breakace, the world's first brake software and hardware combo, so you can get faster out on the trails. Matt and I are PhD sports scientists with oodles of experience, I guess you'd say, Matt, across competing, coaching, and researching various modalities of human performance. And that's what we like to talk about on the Performance Advantage podcast. And this week, you know, it kind of depends on where you're moving, but a lot of you North Hemisphere individuals are shifting into winter focus, which is generally around the base phase is the chat. But is it even worthwhile? We're going to discuss. But before we do, if this stuff interests you, make sure you check out our courses on Training Peaks University or the performanceadvantagepodcast.com website, as well as our personal websites, mtbphd.com and drwilloconnor.com. We've got heaps of amazing content and resources for you to get faster out on the open road trail.
Out in the world.
That's it.
Out in the real world. Or even on Zwift, the meta world.
True. We're moving there. My latest blog, actually, Matt, was I've been getting coached by AI and I think I'm going to lose my job. You know, we need to redo that because we did that AI podcast. I've changed my tune massively. But go check that out. DrWilloconnor.com.
I tried to talk about AI on one of the last episodes. Remember, I was like super pumped because I had ChatGPT write me a plan. You're like, no, we're talking about performance enhancing drugs. You just shot me down.
Yeah, I did.
I just hung my head. And
you're like, can you crop that out? And I was like, yeah, I'll do that post. I didn't.
I didn't think. Thanks, man. That's all right. Well, I guess we know who the boss is then, eh?
Anyway, Matt, for those who listen along sequentially, it's been a minute. It's been a minute since
we don't even need to say that. Let's forget about that. But yeah, I mean, obviously you've been up to stuff. Edit that. Edit that after. You've been up to stuff. I've been up to stuff. So with Breakace, we got a team and we've been shipping stuff. So Rowan, Mac, Rolf, and I, we've been working hard for a long time and we've been shipping brake sensors. The world's first brake sensors are out there and our app is available to download. We had a press release, then we had a factory tour. Actually, a lot has happened and we've been crazy busy. But it's awesome because the thing that we've been working on for so long is finally out in the real world. Shipping takes a really long time when you're shipping things from New Zealand across the world. So people are like still receiving them, but it feels really good to finally get that out there and finally be getting feedback from riders out on the trails, which is sweet. That's why we did it. And I know you've been up to stuff as well.
Yeah. So I released a pretty massive course. It's almost like a self-coaching training program called Reignite Your Running, which is like a 6-month process of like stealing everything that I do and working with an athlete. But I'm actually just going to rebrand that to Run Faster with Data. Just because it more aligns with my brand and I didn't get massive good feedback from the front end, I guess. Back end's amazing. But anyway, for those of you out there who make money online, you know, it's a process and it's a journey to make sure that everything is aligned back end, which is like a massive, massive deal. So anyway, that's been me. Yeah. Setting all that stuff up. But it's good to go for 2023. So I'm excited.
Yeah, heck yeah. Dude, we're already in April, which is crazy. One thing you said, people in the northern hemisphere though are getting ready to come into spring.
Oh, not sorry.
Not going to winter.
Yeah.
We're getting ready to go into winter. We just changed the clocks the other day, which was like, oh, it makes me so sad. Because now it's like lights if you're trying to ride after work or just hop on Zwift. But, you know, I think this is a huge, it's like a crossroads in a way for training. And I remember for myself, you know, it was base training, December, January, February, probably March. And then you'd be thinking, is what I'd be thinking. Like, oh my God, I'm so fit right now. This is amazing. I can't wait to start thrashing the intervals. And I'm going to be so much faster when I do that. You know, so transitioning from base phase to whatever you call it, that phase, when you start doing high intensity and then you start racing, you know, that's basically where I fell apart every single year because I did it wrong.
Yes.
So I think that's what we can demystify today.
Yeah. Well, base phase. What is it, Matt?
I actually wanted you to start by saying what you thought it was, but okay. Base training. I think the general conception of base training is it's just easy training. So training.
Large volume, low intensity, right? It's typically.
Yeah.
So my view on a lot of things, but base training in particular, has really shifted over the years with the clientele that I've worked with. So like the idea around a base phase training is to build aerobic base. And from that base foundation training, you build your house, right? Without a steady foundation, without a steady base, you build the Leaning Tower of Pisa. Pizza.
Trevor, depends how hungry you are.
So you need to establish a base. But I've also now kind of noticed that it doesn't specifically need to be fully dedicated to aerobic development because some people have a really big base. And actually, it's probably better to eliminate weaknesses.
Well, that's what training is, right? Training is trying to improve your weaknesses. That is training.
And build on your strengths.
True. Yeah, true. Yeah. Well, I guess if it's something's your strength, like maybe you'd be better served to build on your weaknesses. But yeah, like, so what do you mean about doing that in base training?
Well, I guess if I think through like a typical client for me, right, is these days is not a professional athlete who has actually, you know, when we're looking at a professional athlete or highly competitive amateur, often they have a season in which they try to win a series or, I don't know, qualify for point. You know, there's like a series of races that they have to do well at. And through that, you kind of can't train as well as, you know, to build fitness. You kind of just have to maintain fitness. This is one of the modules, you know, we talked about in the like how to poach, or what's our masterclass called?
Utilizing
sports science to train more effectively.
Yeah.
That's it. And so in that, you talked about series, like training for a series of events, because that's what mountain bikers do, the World Cups, the World Series, the local series, whatever it is. And then I talked about training for ultra marathons or ultra distance Ironman, half Ironman, where you kind of just train for one event. Even with marathon training, you don't do like five of them in a season. You do one and then you recover, and maybe a few weeks later you'll do another one, but typically months later you do another one.
Wow, that still blows my mind.
Yeah. So a lot of my clientele, they're like, I guess 35 to 50 years old, families, busy schedules, working, and they're not racing series, and but they still want to race regularly and build towards an event. So rather than being like, okay, now we're going to stop and slow down, and now you don't have these like really defined large periods of November, December, January of doing like nothing but really big miles. And then in running, you can't, like in cycling, you can do a 5-hour ride on Saturday and a 5-hour ride on Sunday and do it all easy because you're spending time in the saddle. Maybe do something like even long on a Wednesday or whatever, midweek. But in running, you do like 5 hours Saturday, 5 hours Sunday. You're injured and in bed Monday through the following week. And so you've just missed out on all this training. So in the base phases that I work with, in like runners building towards marathons, ultra marathons and stuff, it's like you need to slow everything down, but we also need to target one of your weaknesses. And maybe, and I call it like a secondary focus. So everyone wants, Matt, everyone wants to run a fast 5K. Remember that?
I do. I still have those shoes. You'll get them out one day.
Everyone wants, they're actually on the third iteration of that shoe now.
What? Do I have the original ones?
You have the original Vaporfly Next Percent. Then there's Vaporfly Next Percent 2, and now there's Vaporfly Next Percent 3.
Oh my
gosh. Just
dropped. So I have slow shoes that I've never worn.
Well, you have to ask Dustin if they're slow.
Yeah. Okay.
That's Dustin Jobier, Dr. Dustin Jobier, who does, what's he? Lab Rat Rundown. He does
We did a podcast with
every
him.
Single like super shoe. But follow on Instagram. Good follow. It's got good data. If you're a shoe geek.
I'm not.
So yeah, so typically I would like base phase is the focus, but the secondary focus is like a 5K or a 10K. Something fun where you're eliminating a weakness, but you're not just doing this monotonous, long, slow training that may or may not help someone who only has 5 hours a week to train.
Yeah. I think this is where we start to run into the problems and into the, like, if you only have 5 hours to train in a week, should you be doing a base phase, which that would be probably most people, right? Like you only got a couple days a week. That's really the question, right? If you have 20 hours a week to train, week in and week out, your training is going to look a lot differently than if you only have 5 hours. Most of us only have 5 hours, so we shouldn't be trying to emulate the same structure that a 20-hour training week would have.
This is my problem with comparing yourself to a pro, because that's what we love to do, right? We love to read, like, how did such and such win the world champs or, like, be so consistent across the season? But when it's not our job to be in the peak physical condition to be literally the best in the world, like, we can't just emulate what they're doing. We can emulate, I guess, aspects or facets of their training, but we need to be able to implement what is going to be most effective in our available time and maybe more so energy.
This is timely, I think, because I just recently saw an article come out from, it might have been Training Peaks or something, or CTS something. I must be honest, I didn't read the article. I just read the title like everyone else.
Guy.
But it said like something about overhyping zone 2 training, which we like has actually been a thing lately, right? Like zone 2 training. That's the thing. That's the thing you need to be doing. You know, actually, maybe that's not a bad thing for everyone to be jumping in on this, thinking that zone 2 training is the way to do it, right? So obviously, like you said, we're not going to emulate pros if we don't have that time available. But I think actually it's really important that we touch on, or maybe discuss in depth, like the real benefits of zone 2 training.
In a base phase?
Just at all.
But this is about base phase.
But what do you do in a base phase generally? Is you focus, like the two terms are probably used almost interchangeably by the general training public, right? Zone 2 training, base training, right?
Kind of
similar thing. So, and that's okay. Because you can get faster.
You know, looking at just being in this world, running with different people, biking with different people, I think people say I'm doing a base phase. Like, oh yeah, I've just finished this race, I'm going to go into a base phase. And then I follow them on Strava and they're out smashing stuff. I think you're right in saying we need to go through zone 2, as we have done many times, because to reiterate the importance of actually sticking to a plan. And this is what I found like with the personality types that do, I know you don't like calling it just endurance sports because listeners out there are doing a bunch of stuff, but like sports that last longer than like, you know, a couple of minutes, like it, even downhill, we've talked about that, how it actually lasts over days with training, with like, you know, practice runs, track walks and all that. We kind of like to prescribe to a certain like philosophy or methodology. And so like with low carb, you go, you're allowed this many carbs, don't go over that. And then it's not so much what you are eating, it's what you just stop eating because you have this like line in the sand. And when we say base phase, you go, oh no, I'm not doing intervals. I'm not doing zone three. I'm not doing hard runs. Like I'm doing easy zone two running. And I think identifying that you are doing a dedicated base phase is really important, because what I see people doing in their base phase is just unstructured gray training.
As hey, opposed, I thought we said there's no such thing as gray zone.
No, we did. Gray zone is unstructured training.
Yeah. Okay, so, I agree. But what scientifically? Let's get into a bit of the science and bring the sports science to people. When you do a zone two workout, what's happening?
You are essentially recruiting your muscles and engaging them in a means that is predominantly using oxygen and fat to generate the ATP required as the energy currency to generate those muscular contractions.
Yes, that's perfect. It's like you summarized our whole utilizing sports science to train more effectively masterclass in one. Is that two sentences? One and a half to two sentences. So, exactly. That's what's happening. So, is that good for everyone?
Yes. What do you mean? What kind of question is that?
So, who would not do that kind of training?
Sprinters, obese people. That's who doesn't do that kind of training. Who would not do that training? Sprinters.
Okay, so are you saying then that that's good for everyone else?
Up until, what would you say, 2 minutes? It'd probably be like the 800 meter, which is like a minute 40. World records around like a minute 39, you'd be, that's the point at which I'd be going, do you need to do any aerobic runs or not? What do you say? You're looking at me like,
I guess, yeah. what I'm trying to unpack the benefits of what zone two training are, to highlight that it's a benefit for everyone at any time of the year, right? But like we said, if you have...
Hey, what was my answer meant to be?
Well, it was supposed to be like closer to what I was thinking, like if you read my mind.
Okay.
Yeah. You're close, but then it just took you so bloody long to get it out. I guess what I'm saying is, yeah, good for everyone. But if you have that limited time, we need to do something else. Because, yeah, okay, your limit, whether you have 5 hours to train or 20 hours to train, is your aerobic capacity.
So in that scientific explanation of aerobic training, or like what's happening when you're running or cycling or mountain biking, whatever, aerobically, that's what's happening, right? We're using oxygen and fat essentially to generate ATP for muscular contractions. However, that does not mean that is the most effective way to enhance our capacity to utilize oxygen and fat to generate ATP for muscular contractions, because at every single point along the intensity spectrum, from sprinting to walking or like easy like pedaling, spinning, we are using a component of that aerobic energy system all the time, and then we're using it in the recovery too. which is super important. And so when we think about VO2 max training, whatever that means, or less like hardcore interval training, when we're the scientific, I guess, explanation of VO2 max training is utilizing your aerobic system to its absolute maximal capacity. Now, you won't do that in zone two because you will have a higher capacity to extract oxygen from your bloodstream to generate ATP, whether that's using fat or now as we increase intensity, glycogen or glucose, because it's faster through glycolysis than it is through the beta oxidation pathway to feed TCA cycle, Krebs cycle, depends on where you learn that. And so now we can say, we can look at what is the end goal, the time availability and the means to be able to, and also like, what is the demand of your event? And then subsequently go, what is going to be the best use of your time? Right.
Yeah. So if I'm Steve, right, our friend Steve, who is kind of our normal person, average, like, you know, take everyone, this is the average thing that they do and the average time they have available and the way that they go about it. What kind of a prescription would you give to Steve if Steve wanted to do a base phase versus what kind of prescription you would give a professional who is entering the winter training to do a base phase?
Oh, you know, Matt, it's so context dependent because when I'm looking at, let's say you got 4 weeks, just say you got a 4 week cycle, the first 4 weeks of your base phase, it might be 3 months, but I have base phase 1, 2, 3. I would, look at when the next event is, like actual, because there might be a short event that's coming up that you kind of need to be somewhat prepared for, so it's not a complete shock to the system. But let's say there's nothing, then actually I would see huge benefit in Steve, the like limited time availability Steve, doing a month of just zone two training. Like actually just for once, most probably, and this is where it's context dependent, they could have been plotting for the last year and actually needs to some like enhanced like muscle crew or like speed or whatever. But for the most people, actually just being like, you're not like, here's the line in the sand, 155 beats or like 300 watts, you're not allowed going over this for 1 month. Go. And then with the pro, it would be similar, but knowing that they have such a massive capacity to train, that zone two may not be enough stimulus to be able to actually, unless they could really put out the hours, you'd probably still want to do some like some of that zone three stuff, you know, where it's like you're not smashing out anything that is, I guess, associated with some kind of performance output, where you're like, I need you to hit these 1K reps on like sub 5 minute mile, or I need you to be hitting 300 watts up these climbs. It's just like, yep, push it on this ride. Smith, you know, this one's for the boys. and just having that ride or that run that's for that, because otherwise, like, they're not going to do 30 hours of just like without going over 300 watts. That's too monotonous for someone who's training that much. Whereas someone's got 4 workouts a week, you know, like for 1 month, that's 16 runs or rides that you're not allowed going over this amount. It's a bit more achievable. And I think the reward of that and laying a really healthy foundation, because a lot of the individuals, Matt, I'm not saying they're unhealthy, they're just like high stress. We live in 2023 these days. Remember the global pandemic? Remember like being locked in your house, Like, hey, we lived through that.
We don't want to get canceled. But you're right, because I totally agree with you, and that's cool, because we actually totally agree on this. Like, with the pro, yeah, bass has to look a little bit differently, but for a lot of our Steves, that is something we have to do. I fully believe in that, like, because what most Steves are doing is they're generating a lot of acidity in pretty much every workout that they do, because it ends up being like gray zone training, because maybe there wasn't a plan, or maybe they're not sticking to their intensity that they should be. So they end up having just this constantly like high acidic environment within their muscles. And if what you need to do is to develop mitochondria and increase capillarization, you can't do that with high acidity as effectively. You can do it, it's just not as effective. So having Steve go through this 4 weeks with 16 workouts that are generally pretty easy is a really good start. And it does set a new foundation for when we get actually into the training that would continue Steve in a positive trajectory, which is probably going to be incorporating a little bit more intensity, but also definitely incorporating that zone two still for sure, which we'd consider base training.
Well, with running, you also, as soon as you start going faster, the load profile, like mechanical loading, is almost like to the power of four. Like, as you start to increase your speed, you start to increase the force absorbed through your body, or like through your lower limbs. It's like, yeah, more than exponentially increasing. And so by slowing down, you're actually able to reduce the like skeletal loading on and tendons and muscles and everything for a period of time, because we're not ever going to take time off. We're not those type of people. It's like, oh, okay, you should have a month off. Okay, well, what should I do? Cycling, swimming, CrossFit? Like, it's not going to happen. So you might as well do what you need to do, but just do it at a way lower intensity. And in doing that, you're able to just continue to progress, or at least maintain, and then reestablish a healthy base. Healthy. So that when you move through, you can also, like, motivation wise, like, I'm in a base phase. It's like, hey, miss a workout. Like, skip it. Like, cause from here out, it's going to get more intense. Like, the when you're on 4 days, 5 days a week, and you get closer to your event, like, the days start meaning a lot more. Right? You can't miss Saturday. Saturday's the day, you know, and then Wednesday's the you got to get some mileage in, and then Thursday has to be tempo, because that's setting you up for Saturday, and then Monday, well, you got to like keep some load in there. So that's easy. It's an easy run or ride, but it still needs to be there, because if you're not doing that and you're away on Friday, you're only going to run three times. Like, well, it's a lower load than we would like in terms of trying to keep conditioning in your legs. Whereas in the base phase, like, oh yeah, I can slap on an extra 30 minutes on Sunday, actually, like, or I'm going to have Wednesday off. It's like, oh yeah, well, it doesn't matter. We've got ages until the actual, I guess, high level consistency and dedication needs to be drawn in. Because if you try and do that all the time, you end up like Gray Steve.
Is it called Gray Steve now?
Gray Steve. We can have different Steves. Steve Gray. Steve Gray. Yeah. It's a nice one.
Yeah. Let me tell you what I used to do for base training, and you tell me what I did wrong. I mentioned it earlier. So I would ride all winter. It snowed a lot. Not a lot, but enough. But we'd be out there every day. So it'd be like,
more than nothing is a lot to a Kiwi. So
yeah. Well, you know, roads covered in snow, or trails it's covered in snow, or trails frozen with freeze thaw, which is super annoying. So you got to get out there early or late. So I ended up doing a lot of night riding. But I do maybe 2 or 3 hour ride, maybe 3 to 5 days in the week. And then on a weekend, it'd be the big ones. So big long rides, generally pretty easy, maybe with a few like town sign sprints thrown in there, even though I was,
you said, 2 to 3 hours, like Monday through Friday
each day.
Yeah.
On between three and, you know, I had no idea what I was doing. So it'd be like lots of recovery days that I probably didn't need and thought I needed. But I always did the long rides on the weekend because that's when we had a little bit more flexibility, and kind of everyone does as well, just because your friends have more flexibility. You're more likely to get out and do the big stuff with them because they have time on the weekends. Whereas for me, you know, it was I would have done whatever it took. I'd be up till 10 p.m., whatever, riding and get it done. So sweet. I'm getting better all winter. We get to March and March starts the races. So I'm thinking, you know, all right, February, we're going to start to do a little bit more intensity. I'm like, yeah, feeling really fit. We do the first race. The first race goes good. And after that, it's all downhill, kind of come unraveled. So I switch at that time from my normal base training to what I consider a race training. And we're racing pretty much every weekend or every other weekend. There's some sort of a race that we can do. So in the week, I'm doing high intensity, probably not as many long rides, but I'm definitely doing 3 hard rides per week. And they're very hard because I wasn't doing any tempo and I wasn't doing hardly any threshold. I was going hard on those hard rides. Do you think a lot of people get caught up in that mentality of switching to getting really specific for their event and just kind of overdoing it from that base phase? Or what do you think about my base phase approach? How is there any way that you could unpack that to tell me what I did wrong? Because the races didn't go good starting in April.
You were
April.
Vegan. You were vegan, right?
Yeah, definitely eating not good food. A lot of monsters, a lot of corn chips.
Yeah, you know, I've run like most of my fastest 5Ks off of ultra training. So what were you doing? Yeah, whenever you have the bike involved, I think it's so much easier to pack on the Ks, like, because you're just not going to break down. Typically, like if your bike's set up all right, then you're good. And there's always people going out for a few hours. So when you're on the bike, you're always going to be able to go out for a few hours. So you can do a lot and get quite tired because you've done so much, and then kind of have it feel like you're doing training. Right. So because in running, no one's expecting themselves to do 2 hours of running every day. Like, that's like, a lot of the pros aren't even doing that, so it's just kind of outrageous. So you're not going to do it. But in cycling, you would be like, oh yeah, after I've put the kids to bed, I might jump on Zwift for 2 hours. And that's the thing that's done. And so while that's not necessarily a bad thing, because what you can do is chronically overload that aerobic system. Like, every time you're pedaling, you're contracting your muscle in an aerobic way. And so to be able to do that every single day for at least a couple of hours, you're going to get a pretty massive response from that. And yeah, for what you did in that, it's nothing really wrong. Right, like that, it clearly worked. You came in real fit. It's that transitional period where you need a really robust plan of how you're transitioning from one phase into another and what the key focus of the phase is. Because the problem I see, and you'll be able to tell me if this was you, but was shifting from, like, let's say 25 hours a week into race phase, because you're going straight into the season, and needing to drop to like 15 or 20. And you're like, well, 25 is fit. 15 is not training. That's like a recovery week. And so then you try and fill it up with junk, even though you're like, you're doing the quality you need to do, and you need to do hard workouts because races are really hard. You can't just like fluff around about it. But then you you can't just fill the next day or the warm up with an extra 30 minutes and an extra 30 minutes at the end, because it's not the goal anymore. The goal is absolutely quality over quantity. And the way to measure that is not TSS. It's not effective load. It's results. It's times, it's power outputs. That's the only way. If you are improving, you're doing it right. Just because your TSS or whatever training load metric you're using starts to massively decrease and be like, oh, well, you're gaining freshness, you're minimizing fatigue, but man, are you losing fitness? Look at this terminology thing called fitness. It's trending down now that you're doing so much less than you were before. And so from that, you're like, oh, I'm not doing as much. Even just a lot, like even if you're just monitoring load by K's per week, miles per week, hours per week, that's going down too. And I think that's where you got caught.
Yeah, I think you're right. I think the what I was doing all winter was really good and it worked. What I was doing in the spring was not the right amount of good. There was a lot less of the good stuff that I needed at the time and too much of the really hard stuff. So what it just basically led to is a plateau or even a decrease in performance most of the time. And that's really where I see, like, for me and the athletes that I work with, this transition into this race phase looks a lot different than the way that I used to do it. Because the way that I used to do it was to make a clear switch between base training, which was a lot of zone two mixed with a little bit of intensity, to a really high intensity and a lot of gray when I got into the race season. So when I work with an athlete, we really try and strip that back and make sure, like, hey, okay, what is your weakness? Is your weakness your aerobic capacity? Probably. Actually, yes, it is. So let's continue to work on that, because if that's your weakness, that's what we need to improve, because we want to continue to make your races better. And that's really hard to do if you're throwing in too much intensity. Because if you're doing high volume and high intensity, it's really hard to recover. Really hard to recover. It's really hard to get the most out of each workout. So you need to be really careful. So base training's great. I think it's great for everyone. But when we transition to those races, we need to be careful that we don't forget about how good base training was. And if we think about Steve, yes, Steve needs that time to do that month of easy training, because there'll be some benefits in there. And like you said, a bit of recovery, which is probably really needed, whether you're running or cycling, that's really good. And you can do this exercise in a non-acidic muscular environment, which is really good. But then, you know, if you only have 5 hours a week, we need to be doing some hard stuff that's still focused around developing your weaknesses, which are probably aerobic. So for the pros transitioning from base training into race training, it looks different, but not hugely different than what the base training looked like, because the base training was very varied for that pro. For Steve, it's probably going to look different again. Like you said, it's very dependent on what Steve did before and what Steve's goals are and what Steve's weaknesses are.
When we're thinking about training, and you're thinking about Steve, and you're thinking about the pros, you've like seen their training or spoken with other coaches and sports scientists and like cycling teams and whatever. You've spoken with me, seen what I do. Do you think there's like a formula that would work for everyone? Are you doing anything? Because we're not, this isn't new science. We're not like sharing secrets. It's not like revealed the secrets of base training. Maybe that's what we'll call it.
That'd be a good title.
Good title. Good
base
title.
Training secrets revealed.
There's nothing new here, right? And we've been to sports science conferences, we've been to coaching conferences, like you've read this Training Peaks header of an article.
Yeah, definitely like, read that. Yeah. even the comments.
You're not even, nothing's mind blowing. Okay. And I've just been doing this AI coaching thing. And like, these workouts are different than I would do. Like, this is structured slightly, and this is, the structure is a little bit different. This isn't new. Like, I'm not like, oh my God, I'm doing like leg swings into push-ups and then running backwards, or like, there's nothing like that. It's like, tomorrow I've got 9x1K. It's just like, that's, and this is like artificial intelligence trying to interpret, I mean, it's programmed obviously, but it's trying to interpret my physiological limitations in terms of like a power duration curve, and trying to attach, like trying to target those through workouts. And that's, you and I would set those workouts. That's essentially like 9x3 minutes. So yeah, that's cool. Like, do you think anyone, like, is there just like a really general formula that someone could follow that would work? or are there people out there who have like got something?
No. No, I don't think so. I think training's not hard. And I'll say that with a disclaimer, because I'll tell you what the hard part after this. But here's training. This is what you got to do. You need to train a lot and sometimes go hard. Right? I heard that from, I can't remember where I heard that. Some smart coach said that on maybe some other podcast. I was like, that's a simplification of what's happening, but it's so true. You need to train a lot and sometimes train hard. But whether we're a pro or whether we're Steve, that's, training a lot is going to look different, which means the training hard sometimes also has to look different. Right? So I think that's the secret. So the secret code is train a lot and sometimes go hard, but that looks different for everyone. Right? Because the hard thing has to be geared around your weaknesses as well. Right?
Because, and your event.
Yeah. And your event. So event specific, sport specific, those kind of things. Highly specific.
Specificity, I think, is the biggest secret I would reveal.
Oh.
Right? Like, I believe, like I said, if you have Steve and he's been plotting for a year, I'm not going to give him zone two. That's not specific to his weaknesses. And then if he only wants to run a fast 5K, it's pointless. He's just been plotting for a whole year. I want to see what his capacity to actually run fast is. He wants to run a sub 20. Well, then you got to be able to run under a 4 minute K. Like, you have to. So where's that capacity? I need to figure it out. And we might as well start working on that from day one. And we can design that in a way that is leading up to his event. You know, maybe his event's a track run, not a park run, like not a road run. We can start to incorporate like low mechanical, physiological load speed work, right? So doing like whatever, a 400 meter repeat, but having like oodles of rest, but not smashing the 400, just trying to build up to like that race pace. It's like, that's specific to that individual, and it's specific to the demands of their event. And whereas we've got other great Steve Gray, you're like, mate, chill out. Like, I actually don't care if you have a 5K in a month or subsequently. You've been running everything near 5K speed in all your intervals. So the speed's there. It's there. What else is there is chronic fatigue.
So I think actually you said it in different words there. The secret, right? You need to train a lot and sometimes go hard. If you're plotting,
you said that.
No. But you basically said the same thing, right? So in the person that's been plotting for the last year, they missed the sometimes go hard part.
Yeah.
So we need to unlock that. But for Stephen Gray, is that a good way to? It sounds better than Steve Gray. But we've been calling him Steve for so long. Calling him Stephen now sounds so formal. So for Steve, we missed the sometimes part in the go hard. And maybe we didn't miss the train a lot part because Steve was doing that. But you're basically saying the same thing. And you're right. I think runners have this specificity is much more important for a runner just due to the changes in the mechanical loading as you go faster. Where cycling or bike related sports, you don't have that same limitation or you don't have that same exponential loading as you increase your exertion. Because you're just not suddenly like pounding the ground harder. You're just like cutting, you're just increasing your drag basically as you go faster. So it's different limitations for sure. So
the distribution of load or intensity or energetic output is kind of is linear with running as well. I mean, some trail runs are slightly different, but for cycling, it's completely sporadic. If you're doing a bunch, or even mountain biking, you're attacking the climb and then you're descending. And then like I'm running, if you're descending, you're still running. You're barely even running easier. Again, the mechanical loading's higher. So, and the differentiation is we're talking seconds per K from when we're not talking 100 watt, 50 watt increments. We're talking like if we're even using running power, we're talking 10, 20 watt increments. So it's all these really small, it's this whole real small bandwidth. So it's really easy to go slightly too hard. Like it's really easy to transition from a steady state, highly glycolytic intensity, like a zone 3, into like above threshold, rapidly accumulating like onset blood lactate accumulation, like or lactate turn point two, like they're all like really small. There's not like, and you're not recovering from them. You're not in running. You don't have like a 4 minute descent where you're freewheeling the whole entire time. So
it's interesting that you said you had your some of your best 5K results when you were doing essentially base training or training for an ultra, but you're never going like, you're never absolutely thrashing yourself for an ultra because you got to do so many Ks, miles. That's really interesting. I think, do you think like you could be, like what percentage of your potential do you think you can unlock if all you ever did was solid base training? Probably, you know, the higher end of base training, not the, you know, 2 days a week going easy. How much of your potential do you think you could unlock by just doing base training full time?
Again,
this is a bro science thing. So this has never been like postulated as science.
Yeah. How much could you lots?
Like, could you be like 95% of your best at all times just by running easy all the time?
But it's the thing is, it's not easy. Like I did a run yesterday, and because I'm so aerobically fit at the moment, and I guess in general, I'm like running like under 4 minute Ks. So what's that? Like a 6 minute mile. And my legs get tired. Like aerobically, I'm fine, but it's a lot of loading and I'm putting in big Ks across a week. So like there's fatigue there. There's impacts. And so, yeah, so then what percentage of my potential am I unlocking? Like in terms of my 800 meter capability, not a lot. In terms of my ultra marathon, yeah, you'll get most of the way there. Right. Because you also have the risk reward. Again, bro science, you have an exponential risk of overdoing something when you start to do like hyper intensity, like supra threshold training, because you could just not be ready on that day that the workout's prescribed, whereas you can almost always be ready for easy or, you know, that zone two training, whereas to do a set of 10 by 400s at like 5K race pace, that's, you're really putting a large stress, like elevated cortisol through your system. And so you got to like be able to be mentally engaged enough to get through that workout. And then you got to be able to recover. But if you're moving house and you've had a new baby, you don't. You could then go do your race and just have just edged out that extra stride length. You know, you could just be getting those extra 2 steps per minute in your stride rate that gives you 15 seconds across your race, and you just got a new PB. Or you could be cooked and you could be running in quicksand, you know. And but with easy training, you're not running that risk. You're not. The only risk you have is that you've chronically overdone it. And this is the risk as well, Matt, is that when you do zone two training, and why I like to put things like 5Ks in my, like at the end of like a base phase or a low intensity phase, is because it's harder to track if you're getting really tired.
Yeah.
Because you'd be like, oh, well, I'm slow today. This is fine. I'm tired today. That's fine. I'm building miles. It's fine. I'm building hours. It's fine. And then you go to do a hard workout. That's why it's good to put them in there, like those VO2 max, like those Fartlek kind of, or whatever you want to call them on the bike, like, you know, 1 minute on, 1 minute off, just stuff like that. You're like, oh, I'm not. This is really, really hard. And I really can't be bothered doing it. You're like, oh, that's a red flag. You could be chronically overdoing it. In which case you come out of base phase and you're cooked because you just like got slower and slower and more fatigued. And then you try and punch out some hard stuff on top of that. And there's nothing to build on top of except fatigue.
Dang. You're like talking about my life in the early 2000s. That's me. That's me.
Oh, man. We've kind of like talked ourselves across a whole bunch of different facets, I guess. What's the solution? What was the initial question?
Well, I guess the initial question we postulated for this episode was, should we even bother with base phase? I think, yeah. Like, definitely. Everyone should. And if we define a base phase as a period with easy training, then everyone can benefit from that, but for different reasons. But also, your transition away from what that base phase, well, your transition away from that base phase and what that base phase looked like is going to vary depending on your goals, your time, and your event. So should you bother? Yeah, definitely.
Yes.
Reap those benefits.
Yes.
Should you eventually do really, 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 really hard training? That was like 6 release, maybe not that many. But should you eventually train hard? Yeah. If the secret is train a lot and sometimes go hard, yeah, you need that hard thing.
My secret is specificity.
Yeah, well, the ultimate secret then, which we just unlocked, is train sometimes, train a lot.
That would be a good experiment, and be specific. Though, to do how much of your potential could you unlock? Because I've had a number of runners, I wouldn't even be able to give a percentage of it. Over 50% do 5K PBs or 10K PBs in ultramarathon build-ups. Like, I work with a lot of ultramarathoners because, you know, just, I'm in the ultramarathon world. So, and like I said, I like to put 5Ks in there to monitor progress and aerobic capacity and everything. I think it's really good distance duration. And, a number, like a good proportion have been able to get close or exceed their personal best. And I think it would be, that's probably the challenge, is now to just go, don't find your zone two. There's calculators on my website for like pace, heart rate, and power, and don't go over it for a month. Do it.
That is not a real experiment though, because
what, do you mean?
What we know is that you're, we talked about this one a long time ago. I remember we did an episode with our friend Sam Shaw, and we talked about how he used to train a lot and then he transitioned to only training a little and going hard all the time. It's like, well, yeah, but didn't you just like build off this massive base that you had over many years and then suddenly start to introduce intensity and rest and you were out of this world better than before. So if someone trains however they are and they transition to just doing base training to see what happens, well, in a way, they're building off of what they did before and they're reaping the benefits now based on what they're doing at the moment.
Yeah, well, then good. Keep doing it.
Yeah.
And then sometimes go hard.
Yeah. Definitely. And I think that'd be a really hard experiment to set out to do, right? Because we'd have to look at what was their training like before. Let's put them in base phase, see how they react. And this is the problem with all the training science, because there are a number of workouts that I've gotten from the literature, including like these intermittent power workouts or, Tabata intervals, which have been proven to increase the lactate threshold in cyclists, right? So, okay, how was that experiment set up? This is what the session looks like, but is this the only reason they got faster, or is it because of whatever training they had before? And it's a really hard
session.
That's
why you sample size. That's why you do the larger sample size.
Well, we know that, but this is a continuous flaw in training studies. It's hard to control all the other things, and people respond differently in those kind of things. So it'd be really hard to set up, but that'd be great. But you could do that experiment yourself, right? Try it. Try just training base and see how you go. See if you can also get your fastest 5K.
Or 20-minute power.
Yeah, or 20-minute power. I've seen that time and time again. Best 20-minute power during an aerobic base phase.
All right, we'll leave it there, Matt.
Yeah.
Catch you later.
All right, see ya.